So welcome back to another episode of Lock It or Leave It. Football season ended. That doesn't mean we stopped with the football guests. We have a former Noel, one of our best, if not best, fullback in FSU history. We have Freddie Stevenson, helped Dalvin set those huge records when he was in college at FSU. So don't go anywhere. When we get back, we'll be hearing from one of the great Noles. Okay, so we are back, and as always, I'm your host, Jay, and joining me as usual is my co-host, Cam. Cam, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Jay. I know we're talking football on this one, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention KD's 51-point night last night. Best seven-footer demigod I have ever seen. He is completely unguardable. Back to you.
Yeah, one quick thing I want to do before I pass it to Aaron is to say that Steph Curry needs six more threes to set that record. Well, six to tie, seven to overtake Ray for the number one all time. If he doesn't get it tonight in Indiana, that means he's going to MSG Madison Square Garden with three or four threes to set the record. And you know if he's in the garden, it's going to happen. So always be betting on that. Watch those lines. But let me pass it on to my other co-host, which is Aaron. Aaron, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. The Bucks had me scared for a little bit last night. Can't lie, I got a little worried. We let Josh Allen get hot. They kind of came back into the game. But, you know, when you have Tom Brady, things generally go pretty well for you. So we're looking at hopefully locking up the first seed after the Rams beat the Cardinals tomorrow. And everything's going pretty well. Everything's going pretty well. Good to be back on break. Had a great semester at Florida State. So let's get into it.
Yeah, one last thing before we go to our guest. Quick shout out to all the graduates who graduated this fall semester. Well, one of our boys, Chad, who hops on the podcast, he graduated in the fall. So congratulations to all the FSU alum that just occurred. But let's get to our special guest who was here in the most dominant eras of FSU football, 2013 through 2016. You paved your way and created a name for yourself. You kind of switch positions too, so please welcome Freddie Stevenson to the podcast. Thanks for hopping on today, Freddie.
Man, I appreciate y'all having me, man. I love the vibe already, man. It's dope, man. I was checking out some of the content last night. I like what you guys are doing. I made sure to share it on my page, and definitely hope a lot of people check this out and tap into your platform.
So, Freddie, back to your high school days real quick. You went to Bartow High School. You were a four-star linebacker per 24/7. You were a, quote, a sure tackler who excelled in run support inside and outside. Now, interestingly enough, there's another Bartow alum who's very intertwined with the history of the FSU program. That's Coach Odell Haggins. So what's your relationship with Coach Odell, and did he really play any role in you deciding to commit to Florida State?
Yeah, I mean, Odell, he's big in Bartow. So he was the guy that came down and recruited me. It's crazy because my coaches, a few of them had a relationship with Odell, and they were telling them my freshman year, they're like, man, this is going to be the guy that comes out of here and makes some noise. And he wasn't really listening to him. But then I came out and I had that junior season, and that kind of, people don't understand. I got all my offers within like 3 months, and I'm stuck on the bed. Like, people don't even know whether or not I'm going to be able to play again. So for a point in that year, I was like the hottest thing in the country. People didn't know where I came from, and then my highlight tape released, and everybody was coming to the school and offering me. But, yeah, Odell, he played a big role, him and Coach Dawsey. Those were the guys that I felt comfortable communicating with.
I just have a follow-up. Do you think your highlight tape would have done even better? Like, since now we have, like, such social media is such a huge integral part of, like, sports, and, like, you can watch any player's highlights ever. Do you think that would have changed some of your recruiting process, or would it have stayed the same?
I think a lot would have changed my recruiting process, to be honest. I think that would have been big. And also, I wasn't the guy that went to camps. All my offers were off film. So you see a lot of guys, they get offers and they get rankings and stuff just off going to different camps and stuff. I got it out of the mud. Like, we didn't really have – our coaches didn't take us to camps, and we didn't have the resources to go on our own. So every offer I got was off of what I did on the field.
Yeah, going off that a little more, you go on YouTube now and you see wide receiver DB one-on-ones, and it's all the top 50 recruits who are just going through a camp, they're lining up, they're all playing, and you're getting more film or more video on them doing that than their actual game footage. So to hear that all your highlights, everything that you have is authentic, it was on the field, it was when there was a clock ticking down and the game had some weight to it, it kind of put some more pressure on it, Kim.
Yeah, so going off that, every football player remembers their first touchdown, and yours came at a historic point in a huge comeback win at Louisville. You caught the ball and took it 35 yards to the crib in the fourth that sealed the 42-31 win for us. Can you recount how that game went for us and how it felt to win the game for your team on the road in that kind of fashion?
It was my first meaningful touchdown. My first touchdown came my freshman year, and I think we talked about the position change. It happened right when I switched to fullback. We played Nevada, I believe, in like in mop-up duty. And at this point in the year, I'm like, man, they switched me to fullback. I don't know if I'm going to stick it out here at Florida State. But having that moment and then the coaches telling me they felt like I could be one of those guys that played 10, 15 years in the league kind of made me stick around and give it a chance. And that next spring, I got an opportunity to show what I could do running the ball. But fast forward to the Louisville game, yeah, I get a lot of my teammates bother me for this game because you see it on the clip. There's like two, three guys blocking for me, and I cut back. But I played that from like the second quarter on with a migraine. I had migraines a lot. Like I would leave practice and stuff. I had to get medicine and things like that. But I never had them come on in the game before. And it came on the Louisville game. And by that time in the game, like, is anybody that knows about migraines, when they get bad, like you gotta throw up for them to kind of calm down. And I was like, my vision was blurred and I couldn't really see that much. So when they called the play, I knew that it was going to be a play that hit. And part of me was like, man, I don't care. Like, just catch the ball and score. So when I caught the ball, I turned around and people think I'm lying to this day, but people that have migraines, they know. Like, man, I swear I saw like three people over there. It was only one defender in the end zone. But I guess, like, I was like, shoot, you look at the guy in the middle, I'm going away from him. So that's how it ended up happening. But it's crazy. They always bother me asking why I cut back. But I didn't really see what was going on at the time. I had a migraine.
Yeah. Could you touch on a little more on your position switch and how that came about, your time at Florida State?
Yeah, I remember coming in. I early enrolled and I had a successful spring. I think I caught a lot of the coaches off guard. Coach Pruitt, Coach Sal, those are guys that came from Bama. They had never seen me play. They didn't recruit me. And I remember to a point where they all want to sit down and meet with my family and everything. And they come in like, man, we're going to give you an opportunity to start an outside linebacker your freshman year. We didn't know that. Like, I was kind of one of the guys in our class, even though I'm highly recruited. You have your Matthew Thomases, your EJ Levenberries, all those guys. They were recruited like by every school. I was the guy that was still trying to make a name for myself. So I caught them off guard. And I think coming after spring, the biggest thing for the coaches was me gaining weight. I was like 212, 215. My game was based off speed. And they're like, man, Freddie, we're going to give you an opportunity to play, but you got to gain weight. And I remember just thinking about all the people back home that were doubting me, talking down on me and stuff. And I let that pride kick in a little bit. I was like, man, I got to play as a freshman, man. So I gained the weight the wrong way. And remember, I talked about my injury. I had a huge injury my junior season. And doctors were saying, like, my career would be over. And I overcame those odds. But when I gained all that weight fast, my body wasn't used to it. So I come back in fall camp, and I just wasn't the same player anymore. The coaches are sitting me down, having meetings with me, trying to figure out what's going on, thinking that something's going on at home. I'm like, man, I can see the plays. I can see them happening. I just can't get there. So Jimbo calls me in the meeting room. He's like, man, Freddie, I think you'd be a hell of a player, but right now, you're just not that same guy we saw in the spring. And just to be honest with you, you're probably going to redshirt unless you want to waste your year on special teams, but we didn't really want to do that to you. And we got a lot of guys on this side. Like, so we want to take a look at you on offense. And I had a few offers on offense coming out of high school. Ole Miss offered me a running back, and Jimbo always talked about switching me back and forth, but we never really entertained it in recruiting. But at that point, it's like, man, what can I do? I'm gonna get red shirted. Okay, I'm not gonna transfer. Let's see what's up. And I just went over there and I learned, and all I could do at that point was work, and it worked out for me.
Yeah, so going off of that a little bit, from your freshman to your sophomore year, you kind of had a bump in what your responsibilities were for the team. And in 2014, you helped Dalvin set his freshman rushing record, and in 2015, the single season rushing record. So for people who don't really know the game as much as you do because you play, could you talk about the ins and outs of playing fullback, the little nuances that maybe someone watching the screen doesn't pick up on? And lastly, just a question to you. I want to say, would you rather pancake block somebody, or would you rather run them over with the ball?
Okay. Yeah. Fullback's tough, man. I played a lot of different positions while I've been playing this game. Pretty much every position on the defensive side of the ball, just growing up playing it. I think on offense, I played everything except for offensive line. So, but fullback is a position I had never played before. And it was probably the most challenging for me because I didn't truly know how to block. And I told Coach when Jimbo brought me to the offensive side, I was like, man, yeah, I play fullback, but y'all got to give me the ball. That's the only way I'm playing fullback. Y'all got to give me the ball. Fullback's going to get the ball. And his whole method of behind teaching me how to block and teaching me how to read things out at the position, like, man, Freddie, you're the guy that makes everything work. You're the cleanup guy. This play isn't successful without you. And it was just tough for me at first to learn everything. And I was kind of getting in my own head. But when he told me, it was like, man, block like you got the ball in your hands. Because they knew I was the guy that was versatile. And they always gave me opportunities in practice to showcase what I could do with the ball in my hands. Like, Freddie, block like you got the ball in your hands. Just don't think about it. And things just started getting easier for me then, like, being able to chip off blockers, cleaning things up. And then once I got to the middle of my sophomore year, I was playing the game. I wasn't really thinking about it anymore. It was simple for me, but I don't think a lot of people understand how difficult the position is because the fullback has so much responsibility on them each and every play. And you're the cleanup guy. Like, you have to make everything right. If a guy misses a block, it's your job to make it right. And that was a tough part for me. Like, when I started out my sophomore year, like, man, listen, Coach, I know he missed his block, but this is my guy right here. And just understanding as you continue to go, like, just trying to make the play as successful as possible. And just little things. It's all about the details at the fullback position, like chipping a guy up on the way to your guy. He may be hanging a little free, chipping him back onto the blocker. Or working with your offensive lineman so that you're on the same page. There's a lot of different things. And to answer your second question, pancake blocker running a guy over. I think a pancake block, it's just you're imposing your will. Like, man, I love that feeling, just imposing your will on somebody. I'm a big dude, so it's a few people I've caught when I've had the ball in my hands. I think my touchdown against Florida, I truck-sticked the guy. But just imposing your will on a guy. James Coleman on our show, he always says, just jacking up their shoulder pads, shoving it into their throat, and they're just hoping for help at that point and just driving them to the ground. That's you got a man child at that point.
Would you say you were able to excel as a blocker because of how much time you spent playing linebacker and on the defense? Because I feel like you'd understand the defense better and know what they're trying to do. So I feel like that would help you be better playing fullback.
Yeah, it helped me understand angles a little bit more. To be honest, just looking at things, and that's really what helped me get ahead. I would know just based off, like, different schemes and things, what the defense was trying to do, and it gave me opportunity with my athleticism to get advantages. Like, I hate to bring this play up, but the chop block play against Clemson, yeah. I had the game, man, I was just manipulating it so much, and guys were scared of me every single game. It was like, man, we can't let 23 chop cut block us. Because my coaches, they're like, man, I'm like, Coach, I do not like going down low. Like, you got to understand, when you stay up, you pancake a guy, you take him out to play, but then you got to risk getting a hold or whatever the case may be. But if you cut a guy down, you completely take him out and you don't have to worry about anything. And they will always get on to me about not cutting guys in games. Then I got really good at it, and I'm cutting all the time. So the Clemson guy, he was kind of slow playing me. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna play this a little different. And next thing I know, he just goes to sprinting. I'm like, what the hell going on? I didn't know Dalvin took off. So we are usually on the same page, but it was something that kind of got a good feel of what the defense was trying to do in some situations like that when it kind of caught me off guard. But yeah, man, I think it definitely helped me playing that side. I knew what guys were trying to do, and I was able to adjust easier.
Yeah, adding on to you talking about the pancake block is we saw the New England Patriots beat the Buffalo Bills, and Mac Jones had 3 passing attempts. He completed 2 of them for 18 yards. And one of the linemen for New England said post-game, that was the most memorable game I've ever played. And they always say that if you could tell or ask a lineman, what do they want to do? They want to run it so that they can just block. So I kind of got that same energy from you. And how did that help you? Talk about your relationship with Dalvin and how that helped you bring that relationship with him.
But yeah, that relationship was big, man. We put in so much time, man. I knew what he was going to do. He knew what I was going to do. And I got to a point, I got so good, regardless of the situation, forward just come up to me. He was like, Fred, I'm following you. I'm following you. You lead me there. And we just had that relationship, man. And being back there with somebody like that, that is that explosive, it's big, because you know if you get your blocker, just get your hands on somebody, he's gonna do the rest. So it kind of puts you in a comfort zone. It's like, man, you don't have to do too much. Just do your job. He's gonna do the rest. And I think that relationship and just being back there with somebody like him that not only understands what you're doing, but he's a patient back. His vision is so elite. He knows how to set things up. So he's gonna help you set up your block and manipulate the defense so that guys can set up their blocks. He knows that he wants to get to this hole. He's like, all right, my blocker has to get here and we want to bounce this way. But he's going to set it up. A lot of young backs, they rush to get to it. And now you got to hold him because your blocker didn't get in place. Dalvin, he's a guy that sets his blockers up perfectly.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Dalvin Cook was torching Jay's fantasy team in the last game. So, you know.
Quick note, since you brought it up, quick note. I went 11-2 this season. And what we did is we started the playoffs a week early. Because too many times it's week 17, now I guess you could say week 18, where the team doesn't really need to play their player anymore. So let's say Lamar Jackson doesn't play the last game and you're out, you're starting QB. So you say, you know what, we're going to go back a week, do everything back a week so that every game they play is meaningful. I'll have a full roster, everything. I'm getting the best luck ever regular season, 11-2, every game. I don't even have to look in the mornings. I just know. I'm watching NFL Red Zone and I know. Debo's going off. I got Kamara going off. Leonard Fournette turned into an RB1 for me this year. Lamar Jackson was hooping. I had DK Metcalf, who kind of shut down a little bit. Keenan Allen, I could go on and on and on. And then first round of the playoffs, I'm getting waxed. So that's just a little telltale sign for how it went for me this season. But Aaron, I'll pass it over to you.
Yeah, so during your years at FSU, you guys were really, really good. Tons of wins, tons of NFL players, and all the players out there were dogs, man. My dad used to say that our backups would be a top 5 team any of those years. The guys like Jalen, Dalvin, Jameis, Nandi, Sweat, and more. So how intense were our practices back then? As we like to say on the pod, iron sharpens iron. So what was it like going through that gauntlet of practice day in and day out?
Yeah, man, it's crazy. I tell people all the time, man, those practices from 2013 to 2016, it was literally anybody can get it. You got 2s and 3s out there that they getting reps and they embarrassing guys that are making plays on Saturday. It was just that type of deal. And it made, like you said, iron sharpens iron. It makes everybody better, man. You look at what Jalen's doing now, man. He was a guy that made it tough on me to get my hands on him in practice. He was just so elusive in his ability to bend. He got me better. So when I get into games and I'm facing guys that aren't as elite and athletic as him, it's easy. And at the same stint, man, I guys like that, it's crazy to say, like, you got a fullback like myself and a few other guys, man. Like, I've had opportunities to embarrass a few of those guys and put them on my highlight tape. So it was, man, anybody could get it. And you never knew where it was going to come from, but it made everybody better on Saturday.
I got to ask you a question about Jalen. I've seen that thing on Twitter about a million times about how Jalen would DM the other wide receivers' girlfriends before the games. Is that facts?
I don't know. I saw it, but I never knew whether it was true or not, but I wouldn't doubt it with Jalen.
Because that's some menace activity level shit right there. Like,
Jalen to get in your head. I'm like, it's crazy. like we had a situation in practice. He's a trash talker, but that's just his zone. Like, not, that's why I tell people, man, like that friendly stuff when you go onto the field, I don't get it now. Like, even in our practices, the guys we had, man, it wasn't like we're cool outside of practice, but we're competitive inside the game. And Jalen, well, he was talking so crazy one day. I was like, Coach, we got to cut it off. Like, me and Jalen, like, what's up, man? You talking too crazy. But that's just how he was on the field. Like, he's that type of competitor. So I don't doubt it at all. He's going to do whatever he can to get an advantage on you.
Yeah, so those types of competitors were the reason why I'm pretty sure your class never lost to the UF Florida Gators. And in your last game against them, you have broke a big run, dove into the end zone, kind of sealed that deal for us down in Tallahassee. How did it feel to get up for those in-state rivalry games, and how did Coach Fisher get us motivated week in and week out to face whatever opponent we were up against?
Yeah, man, those are the games you come to schools like Florida State for, the Florida States versus Miami's and the Florida States versus Florida's, man. It was big. We were the first class in the history to go undefeated versus both teams. And it's crazy, man. It was dope. I know Florida, I don't ever think we had a threat from them in any of our games during my career. But Miami gave us a few scares. But to come out of those on top, it's crazy because you know the history, and it doesn't really happen that often. Even with the streak that they've had lately, man, the team finally got them a win. So it's tough to be a class that goes undefeated against all of them for four to 5 years. But yeah, man, the games, Jimbo was just one of those guys, no matter who we were playing, he knew ways to get guys going and get them motivated. Like, I'm not going to lie to you, you're human. There's some games you get up for, you're not necessarily as motivated for those games as you are the others. But he knew ways to kind of get you tuned in, get guys locked in, so that by the time we were done with pregame warm-ups, your mind's on a different, you want to go out there and inflict pain on somebody. So he was great at that. He was a great motivator.
Yeah, so obviously this season didn't go the way some Florida State fans would envision. But after years of dominance like that, rebuilding the program takes time. So how do you think Coach Norvell will continue to move Florida State back to its prominence?
Yeah, man, I think he's done a hell of a job just looking at everything. I know one thing I always say, the standard is the standard, which is winning championships, but you got to understand where we're coming from. You got to start from the ground up. This was a rebuild. I know a lot of people in the fan base, they expect championships, like myself, I do too, but we got to be realistic that this isn't a championship team. We didn't know that. We didn't believe that. So going in, I think from the first game of the season, that Notre Dame game, it let us know, like, man, something's starting to change. It didn't necessarily show on the wins and losses, but I think it will start to. And you'll see transfer guys coming in and recruits coming in more often now because they're going to start believing in what he's doing here. Like that Notre Dame game, despite take away everything else that happened the rest of the season, that Notre Dame game made people believe that they're going to turn this around eventually. So, you got the Jacksonville State. That's inexcusable. It can't happen. But then people look back at that Notre Dame game and it was like, man, there's something here. And you can look at some of these games and be like, man, if we had a playmaker in this situation, maybe things come out a little bit differently. So this is when you get your recruits or your guys from the transfer portal. Like, you don't really want to throw your guys under the bus, but it's like, man, you got to be realistic. Like, we need some players to come in here that can make that play. And that's where things started to change.
We had basketball assistant coach Charlton Young, Coach CY, on the pod recently, and one thing he told us is that culture doesn't graduate. And I think Norvell's done a great job of kind of building the culture back up to what it used to be at Florida State. And, one of the things that we pride ourselves on at FSU Athletics is making sure our athletes are ready for, careers, whether it be on the field or off the field. Like the NCAA commercials say, a lot of people go pro in something other than sports. So how would you say the Florida State culture helped you for your career once your playing career ended?
I think it was big that we had a lot of people come in all the time and do like different workshops telling us the numbers and things. To be honest though, I wish I was one of the guys that listened a little more. Now I'll figure things out now, but I went through a journey out the ball when things didn't work out. a lot of the things I wanted to do in life, I would thought that being successful in ball, it was like, man, I'll figure that out after I'm done with ball. I'll figure out my other purpose in life, my other passions, and off of ball. So when ball ended earlier than I expected it to, I was lost. But the resources were there while I was playing. It's just I didn't take advantage. People are coming in and they're telling us how things are going to happen, and you think it's not going to be you. So it goes in one ear and out the other. So I just hope guys actually listen to it, because they did put the resources in place. But I think just, man, I tell people this all the time, just being able to, like we talked about, man, being one of the top 250 recruit in high school, then going on, I was number one in my position in college, then I go on to the NFL. But it wasn't my ability that did that. Yeah, you have to have some level of talent to do it, but mentally, man, you have to be a different type of person to be able, because I got so many people in my city, man. I wasn't the best player on my high school team. I got four players that were better than me. Like three of them got caught up in the streets. So you got guys that are sitting under a tree talking about what they used to do, things like that, at all the ability. You have to be willing to sacrifice, willing to do what nobody else is going to do those late nights, those early mornings. It isn't the skill that makes you successful, it's the mindset. So a lot of athletes just have to understand that and know that if you're able to make it to this level, you can go out in the real world and be successful. And I found that out once I transitioned from ball to working in the regular workforce. I had never worked a real job before. And I sat down for an interview, and they were just like, man, we want you, we're not letting you leave the room. And they're like, man, we're going to pay you $80,000 salary. I'm like, dang, I never worked a job before. We'll pay for your move to our city. You don't have to worry about anything. Of course, that was like a year and a half ago, but I'm doing my own thing now. But just to let you know, like, that's what people think about athletes. It's not because of your talent, but it's like, man, this guy's wired differently. I know if he can apply these things to this field, he can be successful. So it's just about a lot of these guys understanding that and just not relying on their ability, and they'll be successful in the real world.
Yeah, I want to bring that back a little bit and talk about some Twitter interaction you had, which was Michelle. And Michelle will actually hit you up on Twitter after this. I think her at was at MBM Knowles. And she was talking about how she needs to mute people due to their atrocious FSU takes. And you quote tweeted it saying, clout is one hell of a drug. People just want to be seen. Could you tell us how you we as a team kind of dealt with that spotlight when we were at our peak in like 2013, 2015? Because I remember when I was young, it was all Florida State football on ESPN. We were on everything. Jameis Winston, all the stories about what he was going through, the crab legs, infamous story like that. So can you talk about how you dealt with adversity? Because I always call these people couch analysts. It's people who scream at the TV through their on their couch because they never play the game itself. These couch analysts always want to talk so much, but they never been out there on the real field. Can you talk about how you dealt with that, how you dealt with that adversity through the media?
Yeah, and I don't try to, like, disqualify anybody just because they didn't play the game, because it's a lot of people that haven't played the game that know the game, and they can tell you about the game probably better than I can. But then you have those people that don't truly have any knowledge, but they're going to go on and tell you, oh, this coach should get fired, this guy's not doing that wrong. And I mean, I could go point out 10 different reasons to you why that's completely wrong and you don't know what you're talking about. Those are the people that I have an issue with. And those are the ones that usually get the most disrespectful towards players on the internet. And I don't believe in disrespecting players. You can, like, it is what it is. If a player's playing trash, you got to be realistic about it. But some of these people go out the way and just disrespect these people as men. And I don't believe in that. I played this game. And while I have the credentials to do that, I respect what they've done too much, the work they put in for me to do that. And the reality is, while I can go out there and say a guy sucks, I play fullback. So 9 times out of 10, they're probably still better than I was. So these people that haven't even played the game, they get more disrespectful than I even would. So it doesn't even make sense to me. And when I played, man, my family rough. Like I got a sister when we were younger, man. We used to always fight together. She getting a fight, I'm fighting. So whenever it used to bother her, she wasn't used to the internet stuff. So whenever people say stuff about me, she's in the DMs, ready to pull up. Like, man, you can't worry about that stuff. Like, a lot of these people, they not ready for none of that action. But I didn't really let it bother me because end of the day, I'm playing on the field for a reason. The coach sees something, I'm doing something right. So why am I worried about what somebody that doesn't even dictate what goes on is saying? And I think a lot of people, it's a struggle for them because I never understood why players would come, because you have guys that do it. They'll go on Twitter and they'll search up their name to see what fans are saying about them. Like, people talk trash about what fans are saying, but you got guys, they live for that approval. And I never understood. It's like, your coach already told you what you did wrong on the play. So why are you coming to Twitter about it? Do you want the fans to kind of defend you and say, oh, no, he didn't do it? No, they're going to say you sucked on the play as well. Or, you know, or vice versa. Like, and you have those guys that come out and seek that attention. So I think a player, the moment you go and seek that approval, that you're setting yourself up for failure. Like, I appreciate the fans. I love every single fan that supported me. Like I said, man, I enrolled at 17 at Florida State, and I got some people that have been supporting me since then, like real loyal fans. But I've never been the guy that went out and seeked approval. I'm me, and I'm going to continue to be me. And the people that love me for that, I love them.
Yeah, just going off that, I was on social media the other day right after the last basketball loss for Florida State, and somebody in the comments literally said, fire Coach Ham. And there was about 40 comments underneath that of just people yelling. It was like some account with a bunch of like random letters and numbers in their username, like no profile picture, just an online internet troll. But like, I just thought that was really funny after what you said.
Yeah, talking about trolls, shout out BigNoel936 on Twitter, one of my favorite FSU Twitter follows. He trolls a lot, but he's a great follow if you like FSU football. You know, you can't take it too seriously. You got to have some fun with it, and he definitely does. I know I've seen him and Freddie interact on the timeline a lot, so shout out to him.
I got to give him a shout out as well. And I keep a balance, man. I like seeing the trolls and stuff. Like, a lot of people, they'll tell you, like, they'll lie, like, man, I don't really pitch. I see all the stuff on the internet, man. I find some of it funny, man. Like, I'm not no square dude that's just uptight all day, man. Like, some people just too serious for me, man. You got to have a good balance in life and be able to enjoy yourself. So people like that have fun and just enjoy stuff. Like, if somebody like me, man, I like to see it. And I just don't like the people that lie. Like, man, you say the same stuff behind the scenes. He's just saying it in front of people. But yeah, I think it's dope to see people like that and interact with them on a timeline.
Yeah, so before we end this, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back. And did you know that Freddie is a best-selling author? When we get back, we'll be talking to him about his book. Don't go anywhere. So before we get to Freddie's book, I wanted to quickly tell all our listeners about Prize Picks, one of our sponsors. And what you can do with Prize Picks is you can bet on player props to earn money. If you say you are not a couch analyst like we just talked about, and you actually know what you're talking about, put some money where your mouth is. So I'll ask Cam, Thursday Night Football, Chargers Chiefs, give me one prop that you love.
I'm going over on Mike Williams yards. It hasn't dropped yet, but I'm going to guess 76.5 to 77.5, somewhere around there. Keenan Allen is questionable right now with COVID. I know the Chiefs defense has been looking better, but Mike Williams, big game in Los Angeles, book it.
Mike Williams over, book it. Aaron, I'll toss it to you. Throw me one.
Like you said, Ken, that Chiefs defense has been pretty good lately, right? But we got to look at their whole body of work for the season. They've been Swiss cheese 90% of the year. I think Justin Herbert runs it up on him. His line set at 285.5 pass yards. I think he goes way over. I think he's in the 300s. So, you know, same kind of vibe. Mike Williams, he's probably going to hit his over if Justin Herbert hits his over as well. I like the Chargers in this game. I like the Chargers on these prop bets. Just a big fan of them overall.
All right. Well, you got those two Chargers props. I'm going to do a 180 and talk about the Chiefs a little bit. They've been on a tear. If they win this game, they're in sole possession of the number one seed in the AFC. And they've been getting a lot of shit this year through the media, through other teams talking about them, saying they're not the same dynasty as they were before. But would you look at it now? They're on a 6-game win streak. So what that means is we are taking Travis Kelce over receptions. is probably going to be at 8, probably about 8. I'm going to go Travis Kelce. Just saw George Kittle give you 11 for 181. He's saying, no, I'm the best tight end. He's getting you 10 receptions. So you can pair that. Travis Kelce, Mike Williams over. And what was yours again, Aaron? Justin Herbert over pass yards at 280-something. You do those three, you put a prop on it, you can win money. And without further ado, use code LEAVE.
Make sure, one more thing, make sure to use our code LEAVE in all caps when you make your account. They will match your initial deposit up to $100. So you'll get an extra $100 to bet. If you like our picks or want to use some of your own, make sure to do that.
Yeah, and lastly, our IG stories will have daily picks. You guys just put a poll on them. We'll see the poll by the end of the day and actually lock in what the majority of the poll answers says so we can get some interaction with our listeners. But without further ado, thanks. Back to the podcast.
So, Freddie, I can actually see the poster in the back of your book. You recently published your own book, Trials to Triumph, where you talk about the obstacles that you've had to overcome in your life that made you the man you are today. Could you talk a little bit about how you got inspired to write a book and why our listeners should go check that out?
Yeah, to be honest, man, I talked about it a little bit early on here, man. I was just going through a transition and just trying to figure out what to do with my life. And life got really dark for me. I didn't really know what to do outside of ball. And it almost cost me everything in my life. And I just wanted to use my story and all everything that I had been through to impact the life out there, whether it was through sports or somebody out there in the world that was struggling and just needed some direction. And I didn't expect it to do what it did, to be honest. Like we're coming up on the 2-year anniversary, and I'll make a post here soon. I launched the book December 30th, 2019, and it did okay at first. A lot of Florida State love, like local love, but then COVID hit, and somehow it just took off. And like people all over, like you got people in Canada, people in China, Ireland, like, it was crazy when I was seeing some of the locations my book was being purchased in, and people were showing love, Spain. And it's a blessing to be able to see what it's done. I didn't know how I was making an impact until somebody I didn't even know, they just reached out to me on Twitter. And they were like, man, I don't know you. I don't want to follow sports, but I saw your book on Amazon. It was trending for a little bit, so I bought it. I liked the name. I mean, you kept me from taking my own life. In that moment, it sent chills through my body. Like, man, I didn't truly know what my purpose was outside of ball, but just doing that, man, it's giving me a feeling that I've never gotten from the national championship, any touchdown I scored. It's been a blessing. I appreciate all the no's that made this possible, because while we talk about the guys in the fan base that do a little stuff that's weird or may do some stuff that's off the wall, you got a lot of good people in the fan base, and they went out the way to make sure my story got out there. And this wouldn't happen without them. And you got a guy that just did a small part in a franchise. You got a prominent university like that with so much history. I just played a small role. And for them, when you talk about these guys coming in, trying to figure out where you want to go, play your 3 to 4 years, universities that take care of their own after the game. And I put this book out and they supported it. And now I'm a best-selling author. And next year I'll be releasing my documentary film.
Yeah, you guys heard him mention in that. He mentioned that it's on Amazon. So if any of you guys want to go check that out, just Google or Trials to Triumph on Amazon. It's like the first one. Definitely check that out, guys.
Yeah, that seems like a perfect place to wrap this podcast up. Thank you so much, Freddie, for coming on. So let's just start these sign-offs, man. It was a great interview. Cam, thanks for coming on again, man. Good slate going on tonight.
Oh, yeah. Lots of NBA. Great NFL game on tonight, too, even though Jalen Ramsey just got ruled out with COVID. I like the Cardinals tonight without Jalen Ramsey, so that's tough. But, yeah, great podcast. Thank you again, Freddie.
Yeah, Aaron, what is your take for this Cardinals-Rams game? Give me what you think.
Listen, I'm going to fade Cam here. I'm going with the Rams. I think the Cardinals are kind of fraudulent, to be 100% honest with you. I think Rams take it. I think they cover the spread pretty easily, win the game outright easily. That's all I got to say on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then last but not least, thanks again. Great interview. Thanks for coming on, Freddie. We just hit him up on Twitter, and he was just nice enough to answer us. It was actually during Thanksgiving weekend, so we appreciate you taking your time out of your day to kind of talk about all things FSU football and life after college, too, which is also very important. So thanks again for hopping on.
And I appreciate y'all. Like I said earlier, without the support from the fan base, I'm not, without having this conversation. So I appreciate y'all. At any time I can hop on, I would love to. You know, schedule's busy. That's why it took us a while to do this. But, man, time's settling down a little bit. Got a little more free time, and then we're going to ramp things up early in 2022 before we drop this film. But it's going to be dope. We're going to have a lot of big-time names on it. But, yeah, man, I appreciate y'all at any time.
Yeah, absolutely. We will leave the link to the book in our podcast description, so you don't even have to go look for it. You can just click that one click. It'll pop right up. You can hear from a great Noel. And that will wrap up the podcast for today. Thank you guys for listening. I just got back from driving 9 hours from Tallahassee to North Carolina, and the boys hit me up and said, yo, Jay, you trying to hoop? So you know what's going to happen. I got to AI these fools. So I'll catch y'all later. People got to get crossed up. Peace.